Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
I am just finishing a 2.5-year divorce. And this divorce should have been over easily and effortlessly because what I offered was basically the world, because I was willing to walk away. But what happened instead is that the narcissistic other side decided to create a persecution of my life and business. And it has been the most excruciating, torturous, emotionally exhaustive, expensive, painful experience of my entire life, including when I was in when I was homeless and including when I was in poverty.
So the big questions are these: how can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung, and I'm so excited to be speaking with Dr. Joe Vitale. He's a motivational speaker, best-selling author of something like 80 books, including The Attractor Factor, Attract Money Now, and his newest book with my friend Tim Schur, One Belief Away. He is an internationally renowned thought leader. He appeared in the movie The Secret. He's also an accomplished musician with, I think, more than 15 albums. And he's going to be giving us some real step-by-step guidance on how to manifest miracles and abundance in our lives. So excited to welcome you here, Dr. Joe Vitale.
My pleasure. I've been looking forward to this moment. You're doing great things in the world, so thanks for including me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I really, obviously when I was preparing for your interview, I went back and watched a lot of your other interviews and learned more about you as a person. And what fascinated me is that you mentioned that you were once homeless. Mm. Talk about that and how did you figure your way out of that?
How did I figure my way out of that? Well, yeah, homeless was no picnic. That was in the late 1970s. That was in Dallas, Texas. It was a very lonely, traumatic, embarrassing, shameful, despondent, suicidal experience. I never even used to talk about it because it was embarrassing. But some people had encouraged me to share the story because they said, if you can go from that to where you are today, exactly, it can inspire and encourage other people. The short answer is I did not know it, but my unconscious beliefs about what it takes to be an author and about deservingness and about self-esteem was actually creating that reality for me. Now, when I was homeless, I never would have said that. I never would have understood that. And if you flew back in time and told me that, I think I'd be pretty upset with you because it wouldn't make any sense. But you asked, how did I get out of that? How I got out of it was this deepful, soulful self-exploration. When I was homeless, I pretty much lived in the Dallas Public Library. On one level, that was great because I'm a book addict. I love books. I'm surrounded by books now. So to live in a library, on one level, that's like, hey, this is heaven. And it was air conditioned in Texas. But on another level, it's like, this is not my home. I have no car. I have no money. I have no relationship. I have nothing. But because I was with those books and I was studying self-improvement, pop psychology, philosophy, metaphysics, that entire Dewey Decimal 600 area.
On the you remember third the floor, Dewey Decimal number.
I still remember it. And I devoured all those books. I had learned to really look in the mirror. And it was that ruthless honesty about how I got to where I was that unearthed some beliefs. And one of them was, I felt like that was the curriculum, that I had to suffer in order to be a success. And by God, I was suffering. So those slow wake-up calls, I didn't have Tim Scherer. I didn't have any coaches. I didn't have any mentors. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have a lot of the things you take for granted today. Thank God there was the public library. So my self-reflection and transformation was very slow because I was doing it by myself. But really, Rebecca, that was the turning point, realizing my beliefs were creating my reality. Sounds insane, because who would create homelessness unless you really thought there was a benefit to it? And the benefit was, oh, this is kind of like paying my dues. Some of the people I admired, Jack London, Ernest Hemingway, some of the great classic American authors, were the ones that I was modeling my life after, which was a mistake. Both of them died suicides. And I headed that way until I had this wake up and thought, wait a minute, there's probably some authors I like who are actually still alive and prolific and happy and healthy. And maybe I can follow their lifestyle and become an author without, you know, killing myself. That's the short answer.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you talked about how, I mean, basically what you're saying was that you had to get out of a victim mentality. I mean, yes. And it's such an easy thing to fall into sometimes if you've had trauma in your childhood or you've had, you know, you've been a victim of abusive relationships in some way. So can you expound upon that, like, you know, how to start shifting your mindset out of that victim mentality?
I certainly can. And let me tell you something you don't know. And your listeners will probably relate to, and the viewers, I am just finishing a 2.5-year divorce. And this divorce should have been over easily and effortlessly because what I offered was basically the world, because I was willing to walk away. But what happened instead is that the narcissistic other side decided to create a persecution of my life and business. And it has been the most excruciating, torturous, emotionally exhaustive, expensive, painful experience of my entire life, including when I was in when I was homeless, and including when I was in poverty.
Yes.
This takes the cake.
Yes, and that's exactly what I teach people how to do, is get leverage over that personality type. So this is so interesting. I didn't even know this, by the way.
I know, and I didn't know of you. Otherwise, you would have been hired 2 years ago to help me clip the timeline on this. I'm only now finishing this up. So I'm bringing it up, first of all, to let people know I relate. I know what it's like to suffer. I know what it's like to be depressed. I know what it's like to be discouraged. I know what it's like to be financially strapped. I know what it's like to be pessimistic. And I know what it's like to feel like a victim. I keep telling people that life is really a process of awakening. And what we're being asked to do through all of these various challenges is to come up against our own barriers, our own perceptions, our own limiting beliefs, transcend them so we can create a life that is far more empowered and empowering than what we even had before. So to help with the people that might be going through this right now and to answer your question, early on when I entered this divorce, and believe me, I am green to this world. I am a newbie to this world. Like most people, you don't have any clue what the legal system is like. You don't know how the court system and the judges and the attorneys are manipulative and can make you feel like a victim. And I remember early on asking
one of... You get victimized again by all of those people because you've been victimized by the narcissist. But then you get re-victimized by the system.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole lot of this that goes on that to me was surreal. For you being in the world, that was your playground, so to speak. But for me, that was the that was the gladiator arena where the lions and the tigers were unleashed to tear me to shreds. So one of the things I asked an attorney early on, I said, look, you do this night and day. This is not your life. This is my life. That's your livelihood. This is my life. What advice do you have to transcend this, to survive this? And one of the things he said that I've never forgotten, and he took a while to get to the point, but he thought about it, he reflected, and he said, focus on the future. Focus on the future. being so caught up in the drama, the theatrics, the tragedy, the melodrama of a divorce keeps you stuck in the quicksand of the past. And what you're trying to do is resolve the past so you can move forward. By standing here in the moment and looking forward and going, okay, what do I want to create? Where do I want to live? How do I want to be? What do I want to do? And start doing the very manifestation stuff that I teach in my books that we taught in the movie The Secret, but somehow get lost when you go through this wind tunnel of a divorce. Because a divorce can shake you up to the extent that you really do feel like a victim, and you can momentarily forget that you still have power, that you still have choice.
Yeah. And I want to just say for people, like, regardless of whether it's a divorce from a spouse or a business partner, anybody who's been victimized by a narcissist in a close relationship like that, it's the same thing. And I was victimized by two narcissists myself, which is why I focus on this, one in a business partner setting and one in a in an extended family member, not as a husband, but equally as painful. And I agree with you. Like, it's absolutely the worst thing. And I've been teaching negotiation skills for years. I was a keynote speaker at the American Bar Association. My book on negotiation, which came out in 2019, Robert Shapiro asked me to write the foreword. Like, I know negotiation, but when you come to deal with narcissists, it's a whole other world. And so, you know, I'm going to just say this to you because I think it'll be really helpful for the listeners as well. The first thing that you said was, I was willing to walk away and whatever. That is exactly why you had an issue, because the problem is with narcissists is what drives them is something called narcissistic supply. And that's anything that feeds their ego. And being married to somebody like you who's, you know, got a level of fame and celebrity and all of that, that other person was getting supply from that. And so walking away, it's not the stuff that the person wanted. It's the supply that they get either from being associated with you, but if that's going away, then the next level down of supply is making you miserable and jerking you around and jerking you through the court system because there's a level of control that is received over by doing that. And so the key to creating leverage and creating a strategy around that, and I just think it's really important for me to say this, is to cut off a form of supply that's going to, or threaten to cut off a form of supply that's going to be more important for that person to retain than the supply that they get from making you miserable and jerking you around. And that's the key. And that's how, you know, if you had talked to me 2.5 years ago, I would have told you that and it would have saved you a hell of a lot of heartache.
And it would have, because you are correct. Part of what I think people in a divorce could do, and of course they're all different, everybody's different, but for me and what I saw is that I was playing the role of the nice guy. And I wanted this to be peaceful. And I thought, well, we can still separate and we can still be friends. And, you know, everything can be unicorns and flowers and ice cream and, you know, all those wonderful magical thinking fantasies.
Can never do that with a narcissist ever.
And see, this is what I know now. And that's why I'm so glad that you're doing what you do for everybody else. I've had my learning experience with this, and I'm obviously still learning, and I'm going to write about this at some point. But you are absolutely correct. And I had actually been warned by a friend of mine who was in the self-help world as a great leader and guru who had gone through his own divorce. And one of the first things he said was, don't be too nice. And it confused me when he first said it because I was being nice. And I thought, well, what's wrong with nice?
I always say that the paradox is for the people who are out there that say, I don't want to fight. I just want this to be peaceful, because they don't think they need to create leverage. Because when you hear the word leverage, they think, well, no, that means you want me to fight. And I always say, no. If you want to get out of a relationship with a narcissist peacefully, you have to create leverage or you won't be able to. And so it's kind of counterintuitive. But
you know what I ended up doing I had to reframe the whole divorce experience, because we were talking about victimhood, and victimhood is being in homeless when I was homeless, and also feeling like a victim as I entered the divorce, because I felt like I was a victim to attorneys. I was a victim to my ex. I was a victim to the judge. I was a victim to the court system. And feeling like a victim is a very low energy, low consciousness way of living your life. What you need to do is move up the ladder of consciousness, which is what I teach, but I was being thrown into a different environment where I had to learn how to do this.
Let's see if you really know this stuff.
Right, right. And in some ways, you are exactly right. It's like, oh, you think you know? Okay, we're going to throw you over here and see if you can walk on fire with the dragons and lions chasing you. But one of the things I did was reframe my experience. And instead of feeling like a victim, I called it my empowerment training. Now, I didn't say empowerment training to my ex. I didn't say empowerment training to the judge or to the attorneys. But in my own mind, it was like, oh, I'm being asked to do something I haven't done before. And what this is doing is calling forth a new strength in me and a new ability in me. And as I flexed those muscles, I became even more powerful and even more empowered to create a different life and go forward with this new future for myself. So one way that I was able to step out of feeling like a victim is to go, oh, this is my empowerment training. I signed up for it. I don't remember when I signed up for it, but I signed up for it. And now what I got to do is go through it, get stronger, which is what I've done.
Oh, I love that. And so that actually brings me into another question that I had for you. And it was something that I actually had to struggle with as well when I was dealing with the narcissists in my life, is how do you get out of this negative thinking? Because you end up ruminating on it. I mean, you know, in the middle of the night, you wake up, you're thinking about it. You wake up in the morning, you're thinking about it. You're brushing your teeth, you're thinking about it. You know, how do you shift your mindset into, okay, I'm going to create miracles. I'm going to create a positive life and get the results that I want. I mean, I teach that 80% of a negotiation is won before you walk into a room. I just interviewed, I mentioned to you before we got on, Bob Proctor, and he corrected me and said 95%, and it could be that. But, you know, how do you go from this ruminating in negativity to, okay, I'm going to win and I can do this?
That is a priceless question. And I become a bit of a specialist on how to answer that because of what I've had to go through, because I know exactly what you're talking about. Not being able to go to sleep at night because you're working on it. Or when you wake up in the middle of the night, your mind's working on it. Or all through the next day, your mind's working on it. And your mind's working on the worst case scenario. There's no light when the mind is working on a divorce scenario. It is all darkness. It's all what can go wrong. So what did I do here? Okay, first of all, I am aware that we have a choice. In our mind, there are, the Indians have said, two wolves. And one is the wolf of faith and one is the wolf of fear. And whichever one wins is the one you feed. So I had to remind myself, feed the faith. Now, I also admit that's not an easy win. Because when you're going through something that can feel overwhelming, as you know, like a divorce, it can feel like, well, fear's going to win this one because the faith is really low. But I would still realize there's a choice. Second thing I would do is surround myself with positivity, meaning all of this has happened, well, for the last year during the pandemic. So my travels, my biggest income, all of that has been wiped out. But I can still surround myself with positivity by what I read, what I listen to, the people I talk to online or on the phone or Facebook, whatever it happens to be. So I can still saturate my brain with the direction I want to go in. I can make myself more buoyant. The third thing is there's a lot of different techniques I use. One is tapping, which is the emotional freedom technique. I'm sure you know about it. Lots of information on YouTube. People can type in EFT, emotional freedom technique, and get lots of videos. I do a Hawaiian healing technique that I know you know about called Ho'oponopono, which would take a whole nother conversation to explain. But I wrote three books on this forgiveness, self-awareness technique to find inner peace. And I must say that I have not been backward about calling for help. I have hired counselors, I have hired healers, I have hired mentors, all of it, because there have been times when, you know, the dark night was sucking me in. And I just felt like I am not getting out with all the tapping I know, Ho'oponopono I know, the books I know, the techniques I know. My own reputation as a Mr. Positivity, Mr. Fire, self-help guru, none of that would help at certain points. And I would call for help. I have a mentor that or a counselor I've used since 1985, if you can believe that. She's still around and I still call her, and she can help walk me through or hold my hand. I think all of these tools and whatever anybody else comes up with on their own are useful, positive, nurturing ways to get through what I guess I'll just call the dark night, because those dark nights do show up. So those are some ways that I've done it.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zahn.
And one of them from Marcus Aurelius said, if you can endure it, then endure it and stop complaining. And I would wake up and go, okay, this divorce is still, there's another unpredictable curveball coming my way. I got to go to court, blah, blah, blah. And I would think, can I endure it? Yeah, I can endure it. I don't like it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to endure it, but I can endure it.
When it comes to the safety of a child in a divorce case involving alcohol abuse, there is no compromise. Take back power, strength, and truth from the narcissist in your life with documented proof of sobriety. SoberLink's alcohol monitoring system is the most convenient, reliable, and reasonable way for a parent to provide evidence that they are not drinking when a child's safety is at risk. SoberLink's real-time alerts make it easy to negotiate with any party. Judges can rest assured that the child is safe. Attorneys get court-admissible evidence of sobriety, and both parents have empowerment and peace of mind. Get an exclusive $50 off your device by emailing info@soberlink.com and mentioning Negotiate Your Best Life podcast. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
This quote I had read before, but it so resonated with me. And that quote was, try not to become a person of success, but rather a person of value. And Rebecca, I looked over the past 30 years of my life, and I wasn't being a person of value in any way, shape, or form. I was only chasing success. I thought, you know, law would give me success, or I thought, you know, corporate finance would give me success, but none of it did. And I said, you know what, that's going to plant a seed for me. I'm going to come up with an idea that's going to be a person of value, that I'm going to provide value to this world with.
And now we return to today's show.
I have to say, for myself, I was doing something similar. I mean, it was basically whenever I had what I call like dead space time, where I'm not working on something or I'm not, you know, engaged in a conversation, you know, where I was cooking dinner or walking the dog or, you know, something like that, which would be prime bad neighborhood mind stuff, I would listen to something, you know. Listen to any kind of positive anything. Stick something on YouTube, put an audiobook on, anything that's going to have you be thinking about that instead of, you know, the what could happen sort of thing. Or what are they doing now?
And I would add one thing that just occurs to me that might be useful to people watching or listening. I really dived into Stoicism during this time. And the Stoics, I kind of call them empowered victims, because the time period they lived through was pretty dastardly and unpredictable, and they went through far worse things than we've gone through, and we think we've had it bad. They were atrocious. But yet they had a mindset that helped them get through it. And there were some of the poster boys for Stoicism, like Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and Epictetus, who had quotes that I would rely on. And one of them from Marcus Aurelius said, "If you can endure it, then endure it and stop complaining." And I would wake up and go, okay, this divorce is still, there's another unpredictable curveball coming my way. I got to go to court, blah, blah, blah. And I would think, can I endure it? Yeah, I can endure it. I don't like it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to endure it, but I can endure it. Yeah. And with that seed of a positivity, I can get through the day.
I love that.
And the other thing I would tell myself is, one day at a time, it's all fine. One day at a time. If my mind projects to a trial date or a, I don't know, a hearing or a phone call or whatever the different legal things that happen, I've already started to forget them, and which is cool, which is also hope for everybody. At some point, you will come out the other side. But during it, I would say one day at a time, it's all fine. I would just focus on today. And as long as I focused on today, it's like, I can handle today. I won't worry about tomorrow. When tomorrow's here, it'll be today. And on that day, I'll go, yeah, I can handle it. One day at a time, it's all fine.
Yeah. That's so good. I actually just, when I was, I told you I was in Austin this weekend, and in the one of the airports I traveled through, I saw a coffee mug that said, "Good morning. I see the assassins have failed."
I would have bought that.
I loved it.
I love that. I love that. But you know what you just did there, Rebecca, with a sense of humor? I think that that gets lost during what we'll call a traumatic experience. And yet it's still available. It's still available. It's lost only because our brain sucks us down the survival path and we're feeling sorry for ourselves and we're feeling like a victim. But if we can just set a timer or have a friend call or set some kind of reminder to say, go watch some stupid videos on YouTube. I saw a Laurel and Hardy, you know, one of the early slapstick comedians, a Laurel and Hardy clip that was like 60 seconds long. And it was like the dumbest thing I had seen for the longest time. I couldn't stop laughing. And it was that laughter is the best medicine. Laughter is a stress relief. Laughter is a distraction. And all of that is available to us because of Google and YouTube. We don't have to pay anything. So anything like that that can change our mood, get us to look towards the light, get us to focus on the future, get us to up our vibration, it's available to us, it's healthy for us to do, and it can help us get through whatever the experience is.
I love that. And so I want to shift a little bit into a conversation about manifesting abundance, because a lot of people who listen to me and follow me, they are feeling very squeezed financially. Yeah. And, you know, it's very easy to fall into a scarcity mentality when you're feeling squeezed financially. You know, a lot of people go, oh, that's just great, you know, that, you know, you offer this or that there's these great lawyers out there or all of this, but I can't afford any of that. So talk about how to shift into a mentality of abundance when you're feeling the scarcity is surrounding you.
Yeah, I definitely understand that feeling too, because having been homeless, I was in poverty for 10 years. And then a divorce pretty much drained me. As you know, it can be very exhaustive emotionally and financially. And yet throughout all of this, I've specialized in helping people get past those scarcity limitations, virtually all of which are, again, beliefs, like we first started talking about in this interview. And most people have beliefs about themselves and about money. And those two things right there play a hand on whether they have money or not, or can keep money or not. And then I know that people say the same thing to me that they say to you. Yeah, Joe, I'd hire you for coaching or mentoring, or I'd enter one of your coaching programs, but, you know, I don't have the money. Well, you know what? I give a tremendous amount away for free. I have a book called Attract Money Now. Free. Go to attractmoneynow.com. Now, in that book, there's a 7-step formula for attracting money. And the very first step is the one I wanted to mention right here, because it's all about your mindset. I say money has no beliefs about you, but you have beliefs about money. And it's your beliefs about money and your beliefs about your deservingness that actually keep it away. Because there are people who go through the most traumatic times and still have money come in. There are people who come to this country in particular, America, and they come here with no money, no contact, can't even speak the language, and they end up building an empire. They get past the beliefs that stop a couple other people. So what are the two areas? What are the two key beliefs? The first one is thinking money's bad in some way, shape, or form. I can begin the quote, money is the root of all, everybody just said evil. Money is the root of all evil. Well, as long as that belief, which is an inaccurate, partitioned, fragmented biblical statement, as long as that belief that money is evil is in their brain, they're never going to want it. They will also say they want it. They will always say they want it, but they will unconsciously, subconsciously sabotage, delay, push it away because they don't want evil. Who does want evil? And as long as they think money's evil, they're going to push it away. So the first thing they have to do is make peace with money. Money is neutral. Money is actually nothing. We just agree what it is. I've often picked up a pen and said, is the pen evil? I could stab you with this pen, or I can write a check to you with this pen. It's not the pen, it's the user of it. It's the same with money. You can probably use it for some evil-like thing or bad virtue of some sort, but you can also change the world and change your world with it. It's not money, it's your use of money. That's the first area that needs cleaned up. The second area is most people don't think they deserve good things, especially if they're going through a divorce and they think they are responsible in some way, shape, or form. If they feel like a victim, if they feel like their self-esteem is low, or if they feel like they're not good enough, they're not lovable enough, they're not likable enough, they're not thin enough or big enough or strong enough or muscular, whatever. Whatever the limitations are, they just said they're not okay deserving good things in their life. So here they are sitting there going, well, I really want money and I really need money. And yeah, I actually like money. I'm going to use it for good things. But money's actually evil. It's bad. So let's keep it away. And more than that, if the money came in, I'd spend it on myself probably. And I don't deserve it. So these are the two areas that need to be taken care of. And a lot of my work, even the book you referred to that Tim Scher and I just came out with, which is called One Belief Away, all of that is in the direction of cleaning up the beliefs. And my book about that I just said, what did I just call it? It's Attract Money Now, attractmoneynow.com, which is free. I'm taking away people's excuses. It's like, okay, I can make money off that book. I'm giving it to you. Now all you have to do is read it and then apply it. I can't read it for you and I can't apply it for you. So let's go see what your viewers are going to do now. Will they go to Attract Money Now? Will they read the book? Will they apply the book? That'll be revealing in itself.
Yeah. And in fact, another interview I saw you talking about this, you quoted Arnold Patton, I think
yes.
it was.
Yes.
And go ahead and say the quote if you want.
Oh, there's a couple quotes. I love Arnold Patton. I think he's passed recently, but I loved his work. And one of them is about money.
Yeah.
The sole purpose of money. Oh, this is big, Rebecca. The sole purpose of money is to express appreciation.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, that is so good. I get chills every time I think about it. I wish I had thought of it. When I first heard it from Arnold Patton, I thought, no, that can't be right. There must be an exception. And then as I wrote checks, I started to think, wait a minute, I'm writing this for the phone. I'm grateful to have a phone. I'm writing this check for the groceries. I'm grateful to have food. I'm writing this check for the car, the mortgage, or the internet, or utilities. I'm grateful to have all that. And when I realized the sole purpose of money is to express appreciation, something shifted in my head because it meant that money's not only good and you use it for good, but when you spend it, it's actually an act of gratitude. Is that wild or what? Because most of us, at least with me growing up, you know, when you spend money, it's like, okay, I got no more now. I'm in scarcity now. I'm broke now. Instead of Arnold going, hey, no, the sole purpose of money is to express appreciation. The more you spend, the more grateful you are. Gratitude is a very powerful magnet to attract more things to be grateful for, including money.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I want to just, you've touched on this with when you talk about expressing gratitude, but I think it's really important that we actually have this as a question in and of itself, and the importance of gratitude and how it kind of puts you in receiving mode. I mean, I think a lot of times people are like, oh yeah, it's great to be grateful if you have all this stuff, but I don't have what you have, or I don't have what she has, or I don't have what he has, or who's he to have all of that? You know, people who are in that, it's not fair mode, like, you know, life isn't fair. Life is fair for you. It's not fair for me.
If people could only hear themselves, you just narrated it so well. That's what most people are doing, and that's what I was doing too. I remember when I was still in poverty, broke, unknown, unpublished, but striving and barely surviving. I kept hearing about gratitude, and I thought, yeah, right. I'll be grateful when I have something to be grateful for. And I would voice that, and people would go, no, that's not how it works. And the books I was reading would say, that's not how it works. You have to be grateful first. And I remember I picked up I need to put a pencil here because I keep telling the pencil story and I only have a pen. But I'll be grateful because it's a great tool for telling this story. So I'm broke, I'm unknown, I'm unpublished, and I hear about gratitude. So I pick up a pencil and I flippantly, skeptically think, all right, I'm going to try this gratitude crap. I'm grateful for the pencil. I wasn't, of course, but I thought I'd just play. I'm grateful for this pencil. With this pencil, I can write a grocery list. I can write a suicide note. Might do that. I can write a poem. I could write, you know, a play. I can write a love note. And as I started doing it, I started to feel differently. And I started to think, wait a minute, I could write a novel. I can write a screenplay. I can write a manifesto. I could write scripts. I can write. And every time I tell a story, my energy goes up because I'm reliving the moment, which was like 40 years ago at this point. And I started to feel happier. And I started to genuinely feel grateful, going, wow, with this pen or pencil, I really could move the world. My God. And then I turned it over and I went, there's an eraser. And I went, oh my God, this is genius. There's an eraser. The eraser means that I can fix my writing. I can get rid of the suicide note. I can check the grocery list. I can go all over that. And I looked and I thought, it's a piece of wood. It's a twig with lead in it and a piece of rubber on the other end. And I went, it's a masterpiece. It's genius. Within a couple minutes, Rebecca, I was transformed. And I was still broke. I was still unknown. I was still unpublished. I was still in the little dump I was living in Houston at the time. But it was a turning point because something in me awakened. It was like a door opened up or a window opened up or the blinds were moved aside. And I suddenly saw the life that was there all along, but I wasn't seeing it. I was seeing it with gratitude and appreciation. And that was when things started to shift for me. So instead of waiting for gratitude, I was grateful now. And that caused more to be grateful for.
Yeah. And you know, it allows you to receive because when you are in gratitude, you're in receiving mode. So it allows you to have more.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, so, it's the easiest thing any of us can do. It doesn't cost anything. You can pick up anything. I was in a movie and I told the story to a woman that was in the movie, and the actress at the end of the scene said, how much for the pencil? And I said, it's not the pencil. I can pick up my mouse. I can pick up glasses. I was drinking my water. You just pick up anything that's around you and pretend to be grateful for it, like I did with the pencil. And within minutes, if you play along, you'll start to feel differently. That's how easy it is to do.
Yeah. So I want to talk about a couple of the steps in your book, Attract Money Now. You talk about giving without expectation. You also talk about prosperous spending. Yeah. I mean, when you are in severe scarcity mode, the last thing you feel like doing is giving or prosperous spending. So talk about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, I've been there. I know exactly what those feelings are like. I remember them all too well. And yet I also know that that's when you have to do it. giving, for example, I just worked with a guy last month. He paid me for an hour consultation. Then this morning, he sends me an email to tell me what happened. And he said one of the first things he started doing was giving. Made him uncomfortable because he didn't feel like he had much money, but he just learned to start giving 10% to, as I advise, wherever you receive spiritual, inspirational nourishment, which could be an Uber driver. It could be anybody. It could be anything. And he started doing that. He also set a goal to make $100,000 last month.
And Rebecca, it was awesome. Thank you.
$8,000 over what he even intended. But maybe that's an extreme example for people. So here's what I do. I give all the time. And when I give, in my mind, there's a little belief that clicks in that says, whatever I give, I'm going to get 10 times the value of that in some unexpected way. And what that means is I'm not calculating it in the sense of saying, well, I gave $10 to that person, so they need to give me $100. I'm not thinking like that. It's more like I gave open-heartedly, without reservation, to wherever I receive spiritual nourishment or inspiration. And again, that could be a waiter, a waitress, whatever. And in my mind, I'm thinking that's going to come back 10 times over, but not from that person. It's just going to come from the universe, from God, yeah, from the divine, from Gaia, from the right something.
Yeah.
And I kind of have my brain on alert, just going, where's that coming from? It always comes.
Yeah.
It always comes, and it comes in an unexpected way. But let me go all the way back. I'm just off homelessness. I'm reading all the books because I was in the public library becoming a specialist in all the self-help books and moving into poverty. I'm on my way up, right? Moving into poverty, and I'm reading about giving. And I'm as reluctant as everybody watching going, I can't give. I need that money for my phone bill, or I need the money for blah, blah, blah. And I started, oh, God, I gotta try. And I would just reluctantly just, oh, God, it's hurting. Give it. And when I gave, when it was hurting, I didn't see very many results. When I gave and my heart was more open because I was feeling like this is an act of generosity and started to realize, wait a minute, we're all part of the universe. We're connected in some way that I don't even really understand energetically. And that money has to circulate anyway. So if I put a little dot of money, like throwing pennies in the fountain, into circulation, well, if it's really circulating, it's got to circulate back to me somehow, unless I block it. And that's when I started to get more money. What most people say is, I will start giving when I have money to give. That's a cop-out. That's self-sabotage. If you can't give now, you're not going to give later. If you can't give a dollar out of a $10 bill right now, you're not going to give $100,000 later, because you're going to have that same mindset. The mindset needs to shift right now. So giving is one of the things I talk about in Attract Money Now, as you pointed out. The other one about prosperous purchasing, I'm very proud of that one. That came as inspiration as I was on the way to the studio to record the audio for that very book. And so I felt like it just came out of the blue. What I mean by that is, if you have the desire to purchase something and you have the money to purchase it, then you almost have to. So notice, I'm not saying go into debt. I'm not saying overspend. I'm not saying do anything that is against what will actually work for you in the moment. But I am saying, if you are standing in a bookstore and there's the book that you've been wanting to read, and there it is, and it's $20, and you got $20, then you have to buy it. Why? Because you send a message of prosperity to you. You're saying all kinds of things, everything from, I have more than enough, I deserve this, the more I spend, the more I will receive. There's a psychological sense of abundance that kicks in when you purchase something that you really want when you have the money to purchase it. Look at the flip side. And this is the important part to consider. If you don't buy it, what are you saying? I don't have enough money, which is a lie to yourself because you just admitted you got $20. There's the book for $20. I don't have enough money. I don't deserve it. I have to save the money for an emergency. All of this negativity is actually reinforcing lack and limitation and attracting more lack and limitation and that kind of negativity. So I tell people, look, again, I'm not advising going into debt. I am saying, though, if you genuinely want something, you're standing in front of the beautiful dress that you can imagine yourself wearing, and you know that you've got the money in the bank or in your purse or available to go get it, then by God, get it. The feeling you're going to have and the psychological reinforcement of abundance you're going to have is going to be worth millions over time. But more than that, the opposite of walking away from it is going to plummet your energy and your prosperity.
So good. Such good stuff. I love it, love it, love it. So I want you to give our listeners some homework. Like they're listening to you, the show ends. What should they do first?
Considering the nature of your audience and the subjects that we've touched on here, which has been remarkable, I love your questions, I love your energy, and I love what you're doing for people. So thank you for including me in the ride. I would say script out your future. And what I mean by that is there's a certain way of writing the script. I know a lot of people talk about writing down what you'd like to have, do, or be, which is great. And they talk about keeping a journal, which is great. But I want to do something that's one step more advanced and one step more powerful. And what I'm suggesting is you imagine the future you would like to have, do, or be. And that future, just make it as real as you can make it, because there might be areas that are a little sketchy depending on what you're going through. I know what it's like that you may feel like, I don't really know about the house, or I don't really know about the location. It's okay. You don't have to have all of the blanks filled right now. But you have a sense of what would make you happy. And so I would write down all the things that would make you happy. What does the future look like for you? Now, here's the kicker. This is the important part. Write a description of it as if you are living it now. Most people will write the description of, oh, I really want to have this house and be in this relationship and have this much money and do this kind of work, but they put it off in the future, which is still good. That still works. But if you want to accelerate your manifestation, bring it all the way to this moment and write your future scenario as if it's present time reality. I am now living in, I am now working at, I am now receiving blah, 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 so much money. I now have this much money in the bank. I now drive blah, blah, blah. In fact, I went for a drive this morning in my beautiful blah, blah, blah. So write your future scenario as if it's already real and write it as if you're experiencing it right now. That will bring in a sensory experience that'll tell your brain and send a signal metaphysically to the universe that this is not only what you want, but it's also already real, and it'll help create it for you. So write your future in present time now.
Yeah, I love that. And I would just add to that, that, and then reread it every day.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, maybe a couple of times a day.
Right.
You know, really start programming your brain, you know, like Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich said, you know, auto-suggestion, right? You know, you're really starting to program your brain and then change those neuronal patterns so that, I mean, it's all what you talked about in The Secret, right?
All that and more. But I love that you said it, because I almost said, and reread it every day. So we're working great as a team here, Rebecca.
You're following it
up. We're Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, I guess. That's what that
I'm
is.
I'm loving it. Loving it. Loving it. So you mentioned that you have this free ebook. I want to make sure that we mention that again. Everybody, please go to
the
website. I think it's Attract Money Now. Is that
that's
the name
it. Of it? Yes, attractmoneynow.com.
Attractmoneynow.com. Get his free ebook. Do it. It's totally free. So there's no reason not to. And follow him on Instagram and everywhere else and get his stuff, take his courses, do everything that he says to do. Because, you know, if you want to start making shifts in your life, this is the place to do it. So thank you.
I'm grateful. I am grateful as well. Godspeed to you and all your listeners. Thanks for what you do. And I always sign off by telling people, my sign behind me says it, Expect miracles. The sun will rise again.
Love it. Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.